This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked, if movies have women in them, are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast, start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Bad boys, bad boys, what you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Bad.
Oh wait, hang on. Sorry. Let me start again. Bad girls, what you gonna do?
An all female
reboot.
What
you gonna do when we come
so
for
brave.
You?
Oh my god, Kaylin, I was gonna join in, but then you were doing such a good job that I'm like, she's got
wow.
it. She's
a
got
star
it.
Is born.
Yeah, that was your. I'm on the defense. Oh,
okay. So here we are. Yeah. We are the bad girls.
We're the bad girls this time.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here to talk about the bad boys because we weren't given a choice.
Right.
Welcome to the Bechdel cast.
Yes.
My name's Jamie Loftus.
My name's Caitlin Durante.
And we are the bad girls. And that's what we're going to, when Allison Bechdel inevitably sues us, we'll change the name of the podcast to Bad Girls.
Uh-huh. I'm honestly surprised that the sequel for Bad Boys for Life is actually not a reboot. That's an all-female, like, Bad Girls reboot.
It's the trend. Mm-hmm. It's the trend. But, you know, they had to make Cops cool again. It's a politically advantageous time to reboot this franchise. So what can you do?
And, I mean, plus the chemistry between Will Smith and Martin Lawrence.
I mean, I want Martin Lawrence to get as many checks as humanly possible. I love him so much. Oh, man. Martin Lawrence, formative crush.
Oh, really?
Yes. But wait, what is the podcast?
I don't know.
I forget.
We talk about the representation of women in movies mm-hmm. and how it usually doesn't do a very good job.
It doesn't.
See this movie.
Yeah, because we automatically just talked about men for 2 minutes.
Right.
We use the Bechdel test as a jumping off point for discussion. The Bechdel test being a media metric invented by Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, that requires that two female identifying characters with names talk to each other about something other than a man. Can this movie do it? Oh. I was honestly on the edge of my seat.
I mean, we'll talk about it, but there's a conversation to be had.
I think it does. I was shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so to all those haters out there who are like, do they just spend an hour trying to figure out if it passes the Bechdel test? No, we know going in. We usually have the answer.
Yeah. So we are talking about Bad Boys 95. We have a guest.
You know her. You love her.
Oh, man.
Is this time three?
Third time. Third. Yes.
Yes.
She's a actor, comedian, host of Scam Goddess podcast, and she's been on the show twice before on our 10 Things I Hate About You episode and What Women Want. It's Lacey Mosley.
Hey.
Welcome back.
I'm so happy to be back. Welcome. I love this pod. Oh, we love all your fans. They're so nice.
I mean, you're a fan favorite. The nicest. So
I love you back. I love you guys back. I'm happy to be here.
Yay.
And for Bad Boys.
For Bad Boys. Yes. So we were thinking about doing Bad Boys because the franchise, as Caitlin was alluding to, is it being rebooted if it's the same cast?
I think it's just continued. It's a sequel.
I've seen a little bit of the script. I can't say everything. I actually turned down an audition for this movie. Not to flex. I was really tired. But I was working on something else and I got the audition and it was just a character that just wasn't me. It was like a badass with tattoos and like nose weapons. And I went into, like, I was self-taping because I was shooting in Georgia and I did the tape like 6 times to the point of like exhaustion. And then I asked the guy who was taping, I was like, if you were me, would you send this tape? And he was like, no.
Thank you for your honesty.
I like the truth. I was like, you know what? And I won't. But it's just like the third installment of this sequel. So it's not necessarily a reboot. It's just the third. It's just like they made the third one very, very far away from the second and first.
They just took a long break.
The second, I mean, it's sort of like the Before Sunrise trilogy because they're almost like, they're like 8 years apart, like, because the first one was 8 years after, or the second one was 8 years after the first one.
Yeah.
And then this one is, however, like over a decade after that.
17 years after. So they, you know, they're in and out, the Bad Boys. They got a story to tell every once in a while. And this is their most recent story. And and I guess that one of the credited writers on the new Bad Boys is Sally Field's son.
Oh,
so, a word.
Big win for nepotism. I always love a good nepotism pick. Uh-huh. You're just like...
Because nepotism rarely wins.
I just am like, who... Nepotism should be like a category at award shows.
Right.
Who did nepotism best?
Daughter of an actor in a lead series.
You not realize had a recognizable last name? Is it Maya Hawke? I think Maya Hawke's one of the new nepotisms. The new nepotisms. That's my show I'm going to write.
Well, sometimes it gets switched up because, like, Judd Apatow's daughter doesn't have the same last name. Or does she?
I know. I don't like a sneak attack of nepotism. Right.
She doesn't have the same last name. Hold on, I got to Google it.
Does she? I, like, sometimes...
No, she does. It's Maud Apatow. My bad.
Oh, okay.
That one's very clear.
When the nepotisms sneak in on you, I'm like, how dare you? Like,
I mean, Jennifer Aniston daddy was an actor,
yeah,
and that snuck in on us because
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Damn it.
Well, then you got like Nick Cage who was Nick Coppola and then changed his name because he's like, I don't want nepotism.
Well, we knew already.
Anderson Cooper is a Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Oh, what?
Yes.
Oh,
that old nasty money, honey.
There's like a documentary about him and his fancy mommy. Because his mom's Gloria Vanderbilt.
Yes.
It's like the fanciest. Ugh, and it's just like, oh no.
I love it. I love it. If I had that last name, look, flaunted. Don't be out here trying to be like, I earned my stripes. Bitch, please. There's no way in hell. Even if you change your name, bitch, you can't change your area code. You can't change your family connections. You might as well just listen. If I was Lacey Winfrey, you would know it everywhere I went. I'd be like, don't make me call my mama. Don't make me call Oprah, okay? Everywhere I went,
Lacey Winfrey.
I'll be at the Starbucks.
Just
Lacey
the
Winfrey.
Character you should do.
2 pumps of vanilla, bitch. Don't you forget it.
Did you ever have the Oprah chai at Starbucks?
No. I've had the Oprah everything. My mom has an Oprah room in her house.
Oh my god!
Yeah, I'm not even kidding.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
I loved the Oprah chai so much.
I didn't have it.
It tasted the same as the regular chai,
richer.
But richer. I paid 40 cents extra just for that, just for the name.
I feel like you're getting a hug from a woman with large breasts and also caffeine.
That's what the Oprah chai feels like.
So back to Bad Boys.
What was the movie? What
Lacey, what's your history relationship with this movie?
I mean, I loved all the Bad Boyses. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, it was a great time for black people in cinema. It's big action films, lots of baddies, loved Gabrielle Union in one of them, you know?
Bad Boys 2, yeah.
I'm into it. I've been into Bad Boys. So watching it again with this eye for feminism, you know, I was very nervous because I was like, oh, I can't, don't put a bad taste on my Bad Boys.
Yeah,
I was really rooting for it.
I mean, there were moments where I was pleasantly surprised. But the
also for the time period though, I feel like it was doing a lot more than the time period was
and
doing.
In context, and this is the last time I'll jump to the defense, I promise. But for Michael Bay, We've seen much worse.
That's what I was going to say.
We've seen much worse from Michael Bay.
Yeah. But it's also not.
But that's not a fair yardstick.
No, it's totally not.
Oh, okay. Jamie, what's your history?
I saw Bad Boys 2 at a drive-in movie theater when I was 10. I really liked it. Didn't go back to get the other VHS. This is the first time I've seen the first one. I've seen the second one before. I don't know. Like, all my cousins really liked Bad Boys, and I knew the song. But it was another one of those things where my family was kind of like, that's not a movie for girls. Boys is in the title. So like, if I had, I would have had to really make an effort to see the first one, just because if boys was in the title, I wasn't going to be able to see it really. But yeah, saw it at the drive-in, liked it. And for all of this movie's faults, Caitlin, you admitted it in the text thread too. It's a fun romp.
It's a fun romp.
I was not bored. I was, which is saying a lot, because the movie that Michael Bay makes after this, The Rock, a lot happens, and I'm so bored.
Yeah.
So this movie is the performances are solid.
The chemistry, I'm telling you.
The chemistry. Yeah. They're on fire the whole time. So yeah, it's good.
I had never seen any of these movies until prepping for the episode. I watched Bad Boys 1 twice. I watched the first half hour of Bad Boys 2, didn't finish it in time before we had to start recording. And yeah, that's my very short history. But like I said, it's, I never thought I would sort of like a Michael Bay movie, and yet here I am. I'm like, this is fun.
I didn't realize it was a Michael Bay movie until we were like starting to prep for it. I don't know whose movie I thought this was, but this is also Michael Bay's first movie.
Yeah, directorial debut for a feature. Yeah,
I realized it from the shots. It's definitely a movie that you need to watch in theaters, because you need to, for it to make sense. Because on your television, boy oh boy, all those slow circular camera pans angle up to the sky, you know?
He goes full corny so many times. I'm really excited for Context Corner for this, because I have a bunch of quotes about the production of this movie. And as with all Michael Bay projects, it's like, you can't imagine. but yeah, just like how he like orchestrates somehow the corniest possible shot every single time, where like suddenly Will Smith is shirtless in the
He's running, and then his chest is just out.
There's a whole story. I'm very excited.
All right. Well, should I do the recap?
Yeah.
Is it time? Okay. Mike Lowry, that's Will Smith, and Marcus Burnett, that's Martin Lawrence, they are cops in Miami. It's very yellow at the beginning.
Michael Bay, is that like a Michael Bay thing? I just think of them as on fire.
Right. he does a lot of like post-production coloring of his footage, but they're driving around, and then some criminals try to carjack Mike Lowry's car. Marcus fat shames one of them, and then but here's the thing, they're bad boys, so they stop the criminals. Or is
they're bad boys and they say so.
They a minute I was like, wait, are they the bad boys, or does the bad boys refer to the bad guys that the cops are trying to capture? I wasn't super clear on that.
They're the bad boys. They're
the bad boys for life. You're right.
it took them 25 years to admit it, but they're the bad boys for life.
So they stop the bad guys, not to be confused with the bad boys.
The bad boys are the good guys.
Yeah.
But the bad guys are the bad guys.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I get it. So then we learn more about Marcus and Mike. Marcus has his wife, Teresa.
And boy, is she his wife.
Oh, boy.
Here's what we know about this woman. She is his wife. And he wants to have sex with her, but she's mean.
Frigid.
Yeah. She's a frigid.
She don't want to have sex. You know how wives be.
Her name is Teresa. At least we know her name.
We know what her name is. What does she do all day? God only knows.
Simply don't know. and they have three kids together. But Mike Lowry, on the other hand, he's a bachelor, womanizer, playboy who has a lot of sex with the ladies.
In that first scene where he goes to Martin Lawrence's house, and then he's like, hey, kids, want to hear about this lady I fucked last night? And then
the wife is like, no.
And we're supposed to be like, oh, she's such a buzzkill. You're like, no, don't. They're like small children.
Yeah.
They weren't teenagers.
Come here, little 8-year old. You want to hear about this ass I got into last night? Like, what?
Kim was like, Uncle Mike, did you go on a date? He's like, oh, I went on a date. You're like, no, make this stop right now.
Yes. Okay. So then we cut to the bad guys. Again, not to be confused with the bad boys. The bad guys are breaking into somewhere and stealing something, and now things are very blue. Then Marcus and Mike, aka the bad boys, they head to work at the precinct, and it turns out that the robbery that we just saw was heroin being stolen out of their evidence locker.
At least it's not DVDs. I was like, I thought it might be something really silly, like the first Fast and the Furious, where they're like, DVDs were stolen.
It's like many millions of dollars worth of heroin.
Yeah.
And it was from Mike and Marcus's like biggest drug bust.
Yeah. Mm.
Joey Pantoliano is their police captain. And then this other captain, a woman, watch out.
Hello.
Allison Sinclair, another captain.
I loved all 45 seconds of that.
She is like breathing down Joey Pants' neck. And she's like, this might be an inside job. Figure it out before the press gets involved. So then the bad boys start trying to figure out who stole the drugs. And they go to this boxing gym where a woman named Max, Mike Lowry is like, hey, Max, let me know if you hear anything on the streets.
And she has a crush on him. So she's like, okay. And then she's like, and let me know if you... Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, we'll see. Anyways, she dies.
Right. Yeah. Then they go to this rich guy's house, and he, I think, was the one who installed the ventilation system that the bad guys snuck through to steal the heroin.
Hmm.
When they get inside the house, he's dead. So Mike and Marcus, who, reminder, are cops, they just start rifling through the crime scene, getting their fingerprints everywhere before any sort of like crime scene photos are taken, mm-hmm. you know, just spoiling the whole thing.
Also, lots of banter about the dead guy.
Yes.
You know, they keep it funny when there's a body in the room. Uh-huh. You know?
Like, let's keep it light. Yeah, like Martin Lawrence is like, oh, it's stinky. I don't like it.
Yeah, he like almost pukes all over the body.
Why you gotta act this way every time we run? Dead body, you know, every day we be dead niggas.
Like, what? Why? And then they just have a banter, and I'm like, this man is dead here. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So then Max, who we find out is a sex worker, and her best friend Julie, that's Taleone, mm-hmm. go to a guy's house because Max thinks that he might be in on this like drug heist thing. Mm-hmm. And then he brings out a package of the heroin on a platter, and we're like, oh yes, he is in on it. But then suddenly a bunch of bad guys show up and they shoot and kill Max.
Yeah. After a long monologue and lots of like making them dance around, it was like, if you know you're gonna kill everybody in here, why you gotta talk so much beforehand? They gonna die, like, and before you die, let me tell you this, like, why? They gonna be dead.
Yeah.
Just kill them and go.
Right. But then, okay, so Julie, who had gone to the bathroom and missed out on the killing spree, witnesses all of this and manages to escape.
Escape on her own.
On her own.
I was like, okay, Michael mm-hmm. Bay movie. Woman yeah. got to do thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Surprising.
Yep. So she now, got to jump in a pool.
Right. So now the bad boys have to figure out who this witness is, and they have to find her. But she calls them first, and she wants to talk to Mike Lowry because her friend Max had like talked him up so much.
Yeah.
But he's not at his desk. And she's like, well, I only want to talk to Mike Lowry. So then Marcus pretends to be Mike over the phone.
This is one of the weirder plot points in the movie because it like they could have bailed on this lie pretty early on and probably like with no consequence,
right?
I think
it seems like
it wouldn't with it,
right?
They really like keep doubling down on it.
Yeah,
so this like
it's funny, but like why?
It's yeah, it becomes
you gotta trick a woman. It's the 90s. What
right,
do you mean?
Right,
uh-huh. Every movie in the 90s was about tricking a woman.
Yes,
they're just doing it to do it after a while.
Yeah, it becomes this weird like Shakespearean comedy of errors thing. And we're like, okay, fine.
It's weird. It's weird. But it's a Michael Bay movie. Anyway.
Right. So then Marcus goes over to her apartment, still pretending to be Mike Lowry. and the bad guys show up. He helps her escape this time. Then Marcus, still pretending to be Mike, takes Julie to Mike's apartment and leaves her there because she refuses to go anywhere for protective custody except for Mike Lowry's condo.
Right. So, which is like hard to trace the logic there. I think maybe because her best friend trusted him.
Yeah. Well, also, the guy who got murdered in the heroin thing, who was also a criminal, was a cop. So she was like, oh, the cops are dirty. I can't go there. They're going to give me up. So let's go to your house, Mike Lowry.
Right. Okay, she makes sense.
Say his name.
Yeah. That helps clear that
That's
up.
How all black people say his name. Mike Lowry.
And then,
like Lowry seasoning.
So now they got to do this whole switcheroo where Mike has to pretend to be Marcus and stay with Marcus's his wife.
And they don't, but they do for some
reason.
And
then Marcus stays at Mike's place pretending to be Mike, and he's protecting Julie, the witness. Then he starts showing Julie mugshots to see if any of the people are someone that she recognizes as one of Max's killers. And there's this one guy that she does recognize, Noah. So then Mike and Marcus go to a nightclub called Club Hell.
You know it's lit.
That was a big one for me. Yeah. I loved it. And it follows through on the name. That club was
I can't wait.
Scary. Yes.
I mean, there's
scary.
Like brown piss in the urinals.
You're like, who goes here?
There are like bodies hanging from the ceiling that are wrapped in aluminum foil.
That's where you go when you want something bad to happen to you.
That's where you go when you have a death wish.
Hey, y'all trying to get Natalie Holloway tonight? We going to Club Hell.
There's also like this giant fish tank that serves as a window into the men's restroom.
Okay. So. But to be fair, if there's not a fish tank at the club at the movie, mm-hmm. are you even at a club at the movie?
And then also, what are they going to smash into?
Yeah,
if not
that's
a fish
true.
Tank.
You got to break the fish tank. That's the rule of
Moves.
Fish.
Yeah.
That's the new rule of fish.
So they're at Club Hell to look for Noah, the bad guy. And Julie decides that she's going to go too. And she brings a gun that she gets, I guess, out of Mike's apartment. And the bad guys and the bad boys, they all spot each other. There's this big fight that breaks out. Then there's a car chase. The bad boys and Julie get away once again, but they still don't have any real leads. Then there's this whole thing where, like, Julie pretends to be horny for Marcus. And then she's like, wow, Will Smith is so hot. And then it leads to this misunderstanding where Marcus thinks that Mike is having sex with his wife.
It's all so unnecessary. And then, like, then they have a fight. How unnecessary all this is.
In a kiddie pool.
Right.
Because the thing about Mike and Marcus is that they're bad boys for life, but they also fight
they
a lot.
They have so much testosterone. My favorite part of that is when they finish the fight, a gun slides out of the kiddie pool. So they've been fighting like armed. They could have killed each other.
Of that.
They were just wrestling with guns.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So masculine.
But
I won't date
so
a man who
masculine.
Hasn't wrestled once with a live firearm.
With
a,
yeah.
Okay, so then...
That is ridiculous.
So they're still trying to figure out who was behind stealing the heroin and, like, what they plan to do with it. Mm-hmm. Then Marcus's wife, his wife, shows up and she's mad at Marcus for lying to her about going to Cleveland.
But it's still framed like, ugh, she's such an obstacle.
Right, exactly.
She's, why is she so mad?
Uh-huh. Believe the lies I told you, Teresa wife. God.
But then this also means that the jig is up and Julie now knows that Marcus was lying about being Mike Lowry. Just then, the bad guys show up again. Another gunfight ensues. And
we got a damsel this tale.
Yes.
We got a damsel.
They kidnap her and they get away with her.
Because she's emotional. And that's why she decided to become a damsel.
Mm-hmm.
She was so smart the rest of this time. And now she's like, I'm just going to walk the streets by myself because I'm mad at you cops.
Right.
Bye.
Her
immediately
excuse?
Snatched.
Her excuse is like, well, if Marcus's wife can find us, then the bad guys can find us too. And it's like, that doesn't track? I don't think. Like, Marcus's wife would know where Mike Lowry lives anyway. So they've kidnapped her and they're getting away. So now Mike and Marcus only have a couple hours before the big deal goes down. And suddenly there's another important female character, Francine. She is, I think, like a secretary.
Oh, yes.
At the precinct.
I thought they were maybe a little mean to Fran. They were a little hard on Francine because Francine, the bad guys mm-hmm. go to get information from her, and they're like, "We'll kill your son if you don't give us the information." So obviously she gives it to them, and then she reports this to Mike, and Mike's like, "Okay," like he's right. I was like, "Oh, what choice did she have, Will Smith?"
Yeah, she's being blackmailed. I think with like photograph. They're like,
yeah, nudes.
Yeah, they took nudes of her, and then they were threatening to post them at her son's school.
Oh, so they weren't even
I don't even think they were threatening to.
So it was like a horny blackmail.
Oh, and also very so low stakes blackmail in the '90s, because like how far could you get with some nudes online? You know. It's not like now we can put them on Twitter. Back then, it's like old timey. Like, what, you have to scan them into the computer?
Polaroids.
Oh, you're gonna like scan a Polaroid of me to my son's school?
Yeah, I Xeroxed this Polaroid. That's worth committing
felonies. Yeah, they should have tried to kill the son. That makes more sense.
Oh, maybe I was just.
You were trying to sympathize with her.
I was just trying to. Yeah. Okay. That's. Think,
yeah. She was like, they said they was gonna upload my Fuji nudes. My grainy Fuji nudes.
Yeah, that's Francine. She's been blackmailed. So she was like giving the bad guys some information, but then she helps out Mike and Marcus, and then they know where to go now. So they go to this airplane hangar because that's where like the drug deal is going to go down. Then there's another big fight, and I honestly stopped writing the recap here, so I don't totally remember what happens. I feel like they win, and then they rescue Julie, and everything's fine.
They rescue her. They're fine. Then Will Smith is able to say "I love you" to Martin Lawrence, which is his. I kind of actually really liked that little arc. Anyways.
Over a dead guy's body, also.
Over, once again, they're standing over and like really not concerned about it.
That's
and
where their moments happen.
It's over a dead guy's body. Will Smith is like, "I love you, my friend." And he's like, "Wow." And then Taylor Leone's like, "Am I cool?" And they're like, "Yes." And there's a dead man there, though.
Cool.
And then Martin Lawrence handcuffs Will Smith to Tay. And then he's like, "I gotta go see my wife, Teresa." Yeah.
I gotta go have sex.
And now at last, I'm going to fuck my wife, who, as far as we know, is still mad at him.
Right.
So, and that's the end of the movie.
All right, cool.
Bad boys.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you?
Let's take a quick break.
Yeah, let's do it.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all five of her best-selling products, including the amazing Youth Activating Melanin Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing five-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory five-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All that available at MeaningfulBeauty.com.
And we're back. We're back and we're bad.
We're back and we're bad boys.
We're back, we're bad, we're boys. Mm-hmm. Can I do a little bit of context
corner? Yes.
Okay, okay. So this is Michael Bay's directorial debut. He has directed some music videos at this point. He's famously directed a Meatloaf music video. And so he's coming in. And but even though it's his first movie, he's very confident about his ability to direct this movie. So there is this great, I think we talked about it in The Rock and Trent. This is the third Michael Bay movie we're covering. And that's maybe something that we should keep in mind about our dignity.
That's true.
But so we've used this article a bunch, but it is an oral history published in GQ in 2011 called An Oral History of Michael Bay, the Most Explosive Director of All Time. Sure. So I pulled some quotes about Bad Boys. So one of the producers of the movie, Jennifer Klein, said, quote, "There was no script when they started filming Bad Boys."
Oh.
So that's something.
That's not shocking.
No.
Martin Lawrence does a lot of improv. It did seem like, good, hey, we need to fill up 2 minutes before we get to the plot point. So Martin, you just let it rip, okay, fam?
We'll figure it out in the edit room. It's just like say things.
There was like a moment where Martin Lawrence should have told Mike Lowry that he had the woman in his apartment. But instead of saying that, he's like, why you ain't come home last night from work, partner? Where was you? And he does that for like a solid 3 minutes.
That was weird, yeah.
And I was like, why won't you just tell him there's a woman in his house? He's like, yeah, and another thing, my ass is hurting today because of that bullet. And I'm like, Martin, are you going to get to the woman in the house? That was Michael Bay like being like, no, we need more screen time, more.
I was like, we just got to fill the time. And it were, I mean, there's like that all like weirdly half improvised scenes in Michael Bay movies are weird or offensive, but like in this one there was that weird like conversation they had about like who are the, were they two other detectives who were like, Lucille Ball is stupid.
Oh yeah.
And then they said something like racist about Desi Arnaz, and then the scene starts and it has
there's always some black and Latino conflict because it's in Miami, so they're like, we gotta keep it true to Miami. The blacks and Latinos gotta argue with each other.
Listen, we are gonna hire 3 white male writers, but let's make it authentic. You're like, yikes. So the most interesting part of the oral history for this movie is that, surprise, surprise, Martin Lawrence, not a big fan of Michael Bay's when this movie was being made. But I guess later he was like, I guess I don't care. Okay. Hard to say. This is 2011. Maybe, you know, he has since made a hard turn on Michael Bay. So I'll just read this exchange. So Michael Bay says, quote, "By week 2, Martin was being a dick to me. And I was like, what is this attitude? He didn't trust the white man. That was the deal," unquote.
God.
Martin Lawrence says, quote, "That's exactly what it was. You know, Michael, he has a certain bravado. One time he said to me, I need your notes on the script. And I looked at him. I said, Michael, yeah, I'll get you the notes when I get to it. And he looked at me with this blank stare like, oh, he did not." So they're just like, okay. Michael Bay says, quote, "Eventually I took Martin aside and said, dude, what's your deal? I'm busting my ass to make you look good, make you look funny, and you just keep belittling me."
You look funny to Martin Lawrence.
He does not need
music video director.
Okay. And then here's the speech, almost like it was ready to come out. Martin says, "I'm a black man that made it from nothing." And this is, okay, this is the wild. Okay. And I said, Michael Bay said, "You know what? I'm a white guy who made it from nothing too. I grew up in the fucking valley."
Slavery.
In the fucking valley. And then the quote ends, "instant respect," unquote. And then Martin Lawrence says, quote, "I had to get to know him. We grew to be the coolest. We don't know. It was, I grew up in the fucking valley.
It's just I like mean, being a black man in America. Let I me tell just, you.
This fucking man, he's horrible. So that's some background of where everyone's coming from.
The valley.
I mean, the valley. So he's really experienced a lot of hardship coming from Pasadena. And then there's like some other stuff just about how like this is Michael Bay's movie where he basically establishes his corny over the top style. Mm-hmm. And Will Smith didn't. OK, so Will Smith says, quote, Michael Bay was like, oh, take your shirt off and run with the gun. And I was like, come on, man, that's just on the edge of corny. But Michael can take things you'd think of as corny and make it super galactic iconic. Unfortunately, I would contest this.
Yes. I mean, let's not forget that Will Smith is a Libra. So, you know, he's honestly just trying to keep the scales balanced. He knows Martin's over here like, I'm a black man. Who is this music video director? And he's like, all right, Michael, geez, if it's going to keep everybody on set happy, I'll pull out these six abs. Come on now. I'm not mad at it.
I'm glad this shot was there. I mean, I wasn't unhappy with it, but
I will see Will Smith's abs any one time you want to give them to me.
Sure. It's formative. So that's the production background. And this movie did incredibly well.
Oh, yeah.
It had a $19 million budget, which I guess Michael Bay ended up sinking a bunch of his own money in it to make the explosions bigger. Whatever.
Of course.
But it made almost $150 million at the box office. Did really well. Meant that he could make The Rock. I mean, basically, this is the reason that we're stuck with him. Another thing I thought was interesting about the background of this movie is that originally the people that were going to be cast, but there was some sort of scheduling thing, was John Lovett and Dana Carvey. That movie would have sucked. Ooh, that would have been
would
really
have
bad.
Seen that. And what that would that
John
movie
Lovett
have
as
been?
What? Dana Carvey as what? Oh wait, them as the bad boys?
As the bad
yeah,
boys?
Yeah, no. Instead of Will Smith and Martin Lawrence.
What?
Isn't that that's like, you know, everything ended up better.
Wayne's World.
Everything ended up better.
Yeah, Garth.
Oh, and then hell no.
Will Smith was also not supposed to be in it. They wanted Arsenio Hall.
Yes, I read that.
And he said no. And then they're like, all right, Will Smith. Because this was like Will Smith's movie where they're like, oh, he's like
a movie star.
He's mm-hmm. not just like a TV boy. So this was like big for him.
They got very lucky that casting fell through because Jesus, did they have it wrong. This is supposed to be a sexy Miami movie and you're going to have these cornballs.
Like SNL actors.
This movie would have been horrible. I mean, the combo of Michael Bay's corny ass shots and then these corny ass men. Oh my God. Yeah.
It would have been really bad. Really bad.
Y'all got so lucky.
So that's a little bit of the context I got for you.
Thank you, Jamie.
You're welcome.
So let's talk about the ladies, shall we?
Yeah.
Well, this is a movie that has
boys in the title.
Boys in the title. So it is not too concerned with women, unfortunately. Yeah. Women are generally framed as either being nagging, frigid shrews, or just meddlesome police captains, or if we're talking about Taya Leone, the main female character of the movie is constantly damseled, harassed.
Anytime a woman shows emotions, there's like a disproportionate consequence. Like Lacey was saying, like Taya Leone shows emotion like really one time when she storms out, and then she's immediately like abducted.
Taya Leone also seems to be putting moisturizer on her legs a lot of this movie.
Yes.
Her legs were very dry. The most arid legs of a movie.
So this is nothing new for Michael Bay, but he loves to objectify and overly sexualize women's bodies in his movie.
Something that stood out to me was Taya Leone seemed to have a bunch of sexy changes of clothes at a place she did not live.
Right, yes.
And she did not pack at the other place. They were shot out of there by gunfire. Yeah. So the assumption is that Mike Lowry just has sexy women clothes at his house. Which actually could track. He's
like,
a ladies'
man. I hope you're a size 4. Like, she's wearing like a leather dress when she needs them. I'm like, where did this come from?
Well, there's that scene where like a masseuse shows up at his apartment, ready mm-hmm. to like give Will Smith a massage, and then Martin Lawrence has to be like, "Go away."
Honestly, my dream role.
But so I think we're meant to believe, right? I think we're meant to believe that women are just showing up at Mike Lowry's apartment all the time, and presumably leaving items yeah. of clothing behind.
And Taya's like, "I'll wear these things." Yeah. Yeah. And every time, you know, Martin comes back to the apartment, Taya's like, "Oh, I was just lotioning my pussy. What's up? Like, where are we going?"
I was just lubing myself up in case something
happens. I have a quick list though of all the of the main moments in which women's bodies are overly sexualized. We've got the opening shot where a scantily clad woman gets out of the car with the other criminals, the bad guys. She just like walks past the bad boys to distract them so that the criminals can carjack them. So it's just like a woman there as a prop basically to distract the bad boys.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the scene where that you talked about, Lacey, where she's just like putting lotion on in this very sexy way, even though she's alone in a stranger's apartment. Yeah. I do it every day.
It was just
there was another one where, like, I guess they're about to go to bed, and Martin Lawrence is pretending to be Mike Lowry. So he's mm-hmm. like, she's like, "Come to bed," and then she's like, got her feet up,
uh-huh.
and she's got like a belt around her feet or something, and she's just like playing with her legs.
And that's weird too, because it's like we haven't really been given any indication that she's like into him. She seems very mistrustful of him, and.
Right. So I think what's happening here is that she's starting to catch on to the fact
she's like calling his bluff.
Yeah. But it's not totally clear, because the first time I watched it, I was like, "Oh, she's just really horny for him all of a sudden." And then the second time I was like, "Oh, wait, no, I think she's actually trying to like call his bluff." But it's not clear one way or the other.
So they're still making her stupid, because the second that she sees Will Smith, she should be like, "Oh, I went to a house where all of your photos were mm-hmm. there. That's your house."
Mm-hmm.
And then, two and two real quick. But they're like, "No, she's a stupid lady with boobs." So she'll believe this man.
And then there's like that, in that same scene, there's like, I mean, there's a bunch of like no homo moments in this movie that do not age well and weren't good then. But like, I feel like that's another way she sort of tries to call his bluff. And then it's like, they immediately go full no homo. And then you're just like.
Right. Because she sees all these photos of Will Smith in the apartment and she's like, "Oh, who's that? I thought he might be your lover." And Martin Lawrence is like, "No, he's not my lover. I'm not gay. He's my police partner." Yeah, it's just like totally a no homo moment. Martin Lawrence is horrified by the idea that someone might think he's gay. Yeah.
Well, that's one horrible way to approach this.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I know that using Michael Bay as a yardstick is unwise.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't. But I mean, It is interesting, just like, because we've seen so much of his filmography now, for some reason, to see someone's attitude towards women get worse over time. Like, there's a lot. I mean, there's a lot of hallmarks of like how badly Michael Bay treats his female characters in this movie. Mm-hmm. But like, she's being treated like a queen compared to how like Megan Fox is treated. Like it's
a power dynamic. As soon as Michael Bay had the power, then it was like, okay, come here, you skank bitch. I'm gonna make you a star.
Right.
And you better say thank you and maybe give me some sex. And he's like also just one of those guys who, you know, like before he had things in the Valley, I'm sure in his life when he was a black man in the Valley, a big struggle for him was he couldn't get bitches. He's not like a good looking guy. And by bitches, I mean, that's what Michael Bay calls women.
Right.
And I mean, I've seen him at restaurants and shit, and he's always with the youngest girls, like the youngest little like 20 somethings, even, you know, 19s and 20s and stuff.
No.
So I think it's a thing of like, as soon as he started getting more power, it's like, okay, now
I can say how
I'm
really
gonna teach
feel.
You hoes a lesson.
God, it's
that does not surprise me at all. Yeah, I mean, the way, even in this movie where he probably, because this is his first feature, like he's probably not given a whole enormous ton of creative freedom, at least in terms of like how he treats the female characters.
Right.
I mean, but even in this movie, there's still so much like objectification and mistreatment of women.
But I think that's just like the action franchise. It's like,
true.
You're going to have cars, you're going to have explosions, and you're going to have legs and ass and titties.
There's a scene where like they're running, there's like a chase, one of many chase scenes, but one of them, they run through like a photography shoot where women are just like in bikinis and they just like interrupt this shoot that like
just
didn't have to be in the movie at all.
There's that scene where they run outside and there's a bunch of people in wheelchairs and they just knock someone over.
Yeah.
You're just like, why do that? What are you doing?
Right. People with disabilities are treated as an obstacle in this movie.
And that's like Michael Bay bread and butter shit too. It sucks because it's like I didn't dislike Julie's character, at least in the abstract. I feel like she at least, and it sucks because I'm just comparing it to other action movies and Michael Bay movies. Mm-hmm. So we're not operating in, you know, like women in action franchises still. There's
right.
really not that much. And if there are, it's just a reboot of an all male franchise and then everyone gets upset.
Yeah.
But I did think that Julie participated more than your average action sideline. I mean, she's still largely sidelined, but at least she contributes in some moments. And like there's that scene towards the end where she like insists on being allowed to be there and be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, she's basically wrong because she doesn't have a weapon or any way to defend herself.
Skills.
Or ability. Right. But I was just like, I guess that huh. I mean, I feel like she does more than your average like woman in a 1990s era action
right.
movie is allowed to do, but that's not saying that
that's
much.
Not saying she also like finds, because the bad boys, aka the good guys,
yes.
are constantly handcuffing her to a vehicle.
They can't stop.
So at one point she finds the handcuff keys and like steals it and hides it so that the next time they do that, she's like, no, I'm not gonna let them handcuff me to the steering wheel. Which pays off, like after she gets kidnapped, she's put in handcuffs and then she's able to use those keys to free herself.
Mm-hmm.
And then she does something, and I don't totally remember. I think she like drives the truck into some of the barrels of ether or something.
I honestly got pretty confused towards
the
end. I loved the barrels of ether, especially because there was a conversation between like I love the evil guy just for purely being evil and really not being that smart. He goes down to the chemist's lab where they're cooking up the drugs and he's like, why are my drugs taking so long? And they're like, it's very humid in here, so it's hard to cook the drugs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care, I'll kill you both. And he's like, well, then you won't get the drugs. I don't care, I'll kill you. It's like, this is not a productive conversation, sir. Like, I just love how brazenly evil he is.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. And so he talks to the guy at the ether truck and he's like, hey man, watch the truck and be careful. And then he's gonna walk away and then the guy's lighting a cigarette and he comes back and slaps and he's like, there's ether back there. And it's like, well, you didn't tell the guy who was running the truck that he had explosives. Like, what do you expect? I loved him. He was just so like one note villain.
Uh-huh.
I did like, I mean, it is like in an action movie like this, it is fun when the only smart people are the heroes and everyone else is aggressively dumb as rocks. Like Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are smart and everyone else is dumb and in the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Including several of the female characters who get not that much screen time, but like his wife is treated as usually just an obstacle.
True. Withholding. I think that the withholding of sex is like more hit on than usual.
Oh, this becomes like
arc.
A running joke with,
yeah.
Because the first exchange of dialogue in the entire movie is Martin Lawrence basically saying like, my wife is a shrew who will not fuck me, so I have to eat this Big Mac in your Porsche instead.
And then Will Smith's like, well, she's hot.
Right.
And then it's like Martin Lawrence is regarded as a good man because he doesn't try to fuck anybody else, even though his
yeah.
wife is withholding sex.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then a few minutes after that, we see him try to have sex with his wife. And she's like, no, you didn't come home early enough last night.
It's also like 7 a.m. and their kids have to get to
yeah,
school. But
right.
yeah, she's such a bitch.
Right.
Like, what?
And then like Mike keeps teasing Marcus about like not getting any from his wife. He keeps teasing himself about it. Like, it's just a running gag.
There's like a
the
phone
movie.
Call or two with her where he'll Like, it seems like there's at least one example of Martin Lawrence calling his wife and being like, hey, can I come home and you will fuck me? And like this is a call that happens between spouses. And she's like, no. And he is like, oh, why not? And then like his like boss will be like, hey, stop asking your wife to fuck you. We've got police work to do. You're just like, what is this?
Also, like, what a like manual for like, if he wanted to cheat, he should have been able to, because what? She would never look. He tried 7 times mm-hmm. to get some coochie during this movie. Mm-hmm. But then she shows up all mad when she's not sleeping with him. Like, uh-huh. What are you trying? What is this narrative?
Right.
She's raising his 3 children. She's busy.
Yeah. There's also that scene where I think it's after Will Smith got like thrown out of a window and got concussed. And it's when Martin Lawrence is supposed to be telling him about the woman that's in his apartment. But instead, he's like, he's just yelling at him and being like, where were you? And then Will Smith is like, oh, listen to you yelling. You're like a nagging wife. And it's like, oh, this movie hates
doesn't think women. Highly of women.
We gotta take another quick break, but let's come back soon and talk more.
Okay, Caitlin. Thanks. Don't make it weird.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Now I'd like to introduce you to Meaningful Beauty, the famed skincare brand created by iconic supermodel Cindy Crawford. It's her secret to absolutely gorgeous skin. Meaningful Beauty makes powerful and effective skincare simple, and it's loved by millions of women. It's formulated for all ages and all skin tones and types, and it's designed to work as a complete skincare system, leaving your skin feeling soft, smooth, and nourished. I recommend starting with Cindy's full regimen, which contains all 5 of her best-selling products, including the amazing youth-activating Melon Serum. This next generation serum has the power of melon leaf stem cell technology. It's melon leaf stem cells encapsulated for freshness and released onto the skin to support a visible reduction in the appearance of wrinkles. With thousands of glowing 5-star reviews, why not give it a try? Subscribe today and you can get the amazing Meaningful Beauty System for just $49.95. That includes our introductory 5-piece system, free gifts, free shipping, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. All of that available at meaningfulbeauty.com.
And we're back.
Yeah.
I want to say one more thing about Julie while we're still talking about her. Things that I liked that she did was rescued herself at the beginning when mm-hmm. her friend was killed. She doesn't need to be rescued by some nameless male character.
Yeah.
I like that she calls the cops mm-hmm. and is like, hey, this is what I need, blah, blah, blah. And maybe that's it. Oh, and I like that it seems like, again, it's like, Lacey, I think you're totally spot on with like just Michael Bay doesn't have enough power yet to make the movie as sexist as he would want to. But even though it's like they do chain Taleone and Will Smith together at the end, they handcuff them together, mm-hmm. but they don't kiss. And I thought that was a lot of restraint for Michael Bay, was that there was a woman in the movie the whole time and she didn't kiss anyone.
True.
That's some Bay restraint.
Also fascinating that so Mike Lowry knew that the boxing girl in the gym was a call girl.
Yes.
So when he finds out that she dies and, like, pulls up the sheet and he's, like, all hurt and shit, cut to Martin Lawrence being like, hey, I got the other girl's friend in your apartment. And he's like, you have a hooker in my house?
Right.
You have a hooker right. in my house. And it's like, the other girl was technically a hooker too, but you seem to be very nice to her. Like, what's with one sex worker worse than the other?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, so this movie has a strong contempt for sex workers and sex work.
Yes. And I, so on the Wikipedia for this movie, scholar, coming at this from a scholarly perspective.
Of course.
Max is described as both a sex worker and his ex-girlfriend.
Oh.
Which I don't know if maybe it was like a line of dialogue we missed or this could be inaccurate, but that was how I was trying to contextualize that relationship is that they knew each other possibly through sex work, but also they'd had some sort of relationship. And then I think that this movie, like, it's very non-specific sex work. They're like, it seems like escorty. It's not very specific about what it is, but it was like pretty egregious that there's two black women with significant roles, or I mean significant being a stretch, but there's Martin Lawrence's wife and then there's Max, who's killed off
almost right immediately.
She does a twirl, though. She does get one good spin in, honey.
I was trying to figure out who the actor who played her was, and it was Karen Alexander, who was like, she has like a pretty cool story. She is like a model turned actor. Yeah, which I mean, I think you can always tell when it's a model turned actor. But she's a model turned actor. She like did a lot of like cool activism work to get black models more accepted in American mainstream culture in the 80s. Acted for a little while, and now she's represented by Trump Model Management. Oh, so, you know, life is crazy. Life comes at you fast, very fast.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was so like.
And then also the like Madame, who she has
Lois,
a conversation
Madame
with.
Madame Lois.
Yeah. They are both murdered. So all the sex workers we see on screen in this movie are punished by being murdered
for being sex workers, and they make it, and they go out of their way, even though it is not plot relevant, to not make Taya Leone a sex worker as well. They go out of their way to make it clear. She's like, well, I'm not a sex worker, but I'll be an escort for tonight because you're my best friend. Mm-hmm. I'm a photographer and I'm struggling. The scene that passes the Bechdel test, spoiler alert, in this movie is so horribly written. It is like, it passes the Bechdel test because it's Julie and Max talking to each other about general stuff. They're just screaming exposition, but like they're not even looking at each other. Like, like
that's
like
how you know they're acting. Like, when are you making full eye contact with someone in a scene?
Right.
You're explaining your job and like, look, I am not a sex worker. I don't condone sex work. However, I am a beautiful white woman who does photography and art and is worthy of life. Right. So I will go with you to this event, but know that I'm an unwilling participant.
And then Max is like, okay, I still have feelings for Will Smith. And Taya Leone is like, okay. And then they walk in and you're just like, like Taya Leone is basically screaming like, yeah, I am a white woman who is not a sex worker. Like, she's screaming to the audience, I'm going to live.
Right.
Like, it's just, ugh, it's so much.
I forgot that we learned that she's a photographer.
It's not
so
relevant.
So at least we know what she does.
Has something to live
matter.
For. Photographer is also just like this, it's still like the stock photo of like film jobs for waify women. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Are you just a beautiful woman who's skating her way through life? Photography.
Give her a Polaroid. She's got this.
Somehow this is a job. Like,
well, do you think she took the photos of Francine?
No, that's not how she would use her skills.
No,
oh,
no.
That would be really funny though if she was where she was
I
a
don't
bad
think
guy.
That. But yeah, I guess, I mean, we learn, again, not to give this movie any credit whatsoever, but I was surprised that we learn a little bit about Julie in that we get a sense of some of her sort of like code of ethics in that she does not eat meat. She's a vegetarian.
I liked that. I thought that that was like fun and also is like cute because you're like, oh, the boy writers are like, what should we say about her?
I don't eat flesh.
Yeah. She goes on this rant about bologna. You're just like, okay, sure, I guess. I don't know. No bologna, Taya Leone, baby. You know,
I love it.
Sorry about that.
So yeah, we get two facts about her.
But yeah, they did Max's character so dirty. It sucked.
Yeah.
Like, and just on top of that, where they, it's just like that thing where a writer knows that this character is going to die, obviously, so they don't even bother to characterize her. They're like, oh, okay, well, we don't need to say anything. We don't even need to say if she has an interest in anything except Will Smith, because we need her death to move forward the narrative of Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. Like, the narrative just, like, sacrifices her so that the movie can happen.
Right.
And it's...
Also, the scene where she gets shot, Michael Bay, the corniness jumped out. Like, truly. It's like she spins in a circle. He grabs a pillow and it's behind his back, and then the evil guy shoots her through the pillow, and then the music's like... And then it zooms in on an eyeball, which is like the expression of an eyeball that's just been shot. And, and then it wasn't enough that she's like falling in slow-mo. Of course, there's a glass table behind her. Because why not? Why not?
And then that scene, she also never comes up again, really, after, like, you get that shot of, like, Martin Lawrence, he's like, oh, no, it's Will Smith's ex. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, and then Will Smith goes,
but then
they sort of stop talking about it. Like, it becomes about the crime and the bad guys, but it sort of stops being about her.
There's one moment when they're like, it's like after a chase scene where the bad guys get away, and they're like, darn it, we still don't know when the big drug bust is happening. And then Julie's like, who cares about that? What about us letting the killers of Max get away? Like, that should be our motivation. And they're just like, oh, right, Max. Yes, I remember her.
Yes,
now.
Yes. We knew a Max.
Hooker. The hooker. Okay. Yeah. It's coming back to me. Yeah. Also, that was the only dead body that they were somber around. Every other dead body was like Death Comedy Jam. But
Martin Lawrence being like,
and we'll be like, come on, man, this is a dead body. Look, I'm gonna play with his mouth. Like, you know, just really caring.
And they kill her. Like, she's like laid out, shot to death in the most model-like way ever.
So
they're
hot.
Like, she looks like an angel. There's like the smallest bit of blood on the side of her face, and was like, oh, my girlfriend, oh my God. And then forgets about her 2 seconds later.
Right.
I'm glad that at least Taya Leone is like, hey, that's my friend. I'm not here for no reason.
Right. She at least sticks up for her.
Although I thought the
friend.
Bad guy's plot was a little stupid. It just seems like you guys got the heroin. The girl's already with the cops. So if she's talked, she's already talked. Why are y'all so focused on killing her? Mm-hmm. Like, go do the drug deal. What? Why? She's already with the cops. Like, it just seems like we should just do our thing, our drug thing, instead of showing up everywhere that you could potentially get caught to try to kill her.
There's not a lot of logic, perhaps.
Logic plays no role. Can we talk about Allison Sinclair for a second? What the fuck was that? I it's just like another kind of empty gesture, or like they accidentally wrote in a female character or something, where she's like another, like she's a little bit above them, right? Or is she a detective?
She's a captain.
Okay. I don't know.
And she comes from like internal affairs or something like that. So she's presented as an obstacle, as many of the other female characters in this movie are. But she's like breathing down Joey Pantoliano's neck about like,
of course,
we
Joey
gotta solve this case or else the press is gonna have a field day with us.
I mean, she's definitely written to be a bitchy obstacle.
Like a ball buster.
I want to make a shirt that says bitchy obstacle. new merch. but then she's just...
She shows up every once in a while.
And then it's like Idris Elba comes up to her and Kat's and goes, row! And then she just disappears from the scene.
Yeah.
Ineffable.
Cavity.
Ineffable. And then she disappears. So she's there and you're just like, okay. I don't know if this was just the 90s, but both the women who work for the police department have the same severe blonde haircut. Like, it was, I kept confusing Allison and Francine because they had the same haircut. Mm-hmm.
Bleach blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And some kind of girly.
How do you describe that haircut? I'm like,
not sure.
Hair doesn't fall that way anymore.
No.
I don't know what.
It was a different time.
Hair what fell. Was being done.
Hair fell differently.
The
back
gravitational pull of the earth is different
the
now.
The air quality has changed.
It must have been, maybe was Cyndi Lauper popular then? I don't know. That was the 80s.
I don't remember.
Was it Madonna?
Maybe it was Madonna.
It was Madonna.
Bleach blonde. Weird hair that
was
yeah,
that when
that
she was
Madonna.
Doing like Express Yourself. Yeah, it's been, around that song. That song was like
Express Vogue
Yourself.
Time.
Don't repress yourself. Express yourself. Don't repress yourself. It was that hair. It was that haircut.
Yeah. Okay. So
it was the Human Nature haircut.
There was. Oh,
yes.
So they're just like trying to be Madonna, but it's confusing.
They were like, "Give me two Madonnas who work in the precinct. one of them gets a few lines. The other one's a traitor."
Yeah, exactly.
Benedict Francine.
Yep, that's it. And they were also wearing 90s type clothes, like, which actually isn't weird to have in a Miami PD, like women dressed not like police officers per se, because that's like a thing in Miami is like the suit leggings is what we call them. Like everyone dresses like a little more hypersexualized at the workplace.
Okay.
So that's actually not a weird thing for the movie.
Okay. Interesting. Good to know.
You're both like, really? I'm like, yeah. Oh. I lived in Miami. It's just that, you know, you get a highlighter palette wardrobe and everything's tied.
I've never been to Miami.
Because it's hot. It's just hot. It's humid.
It's just hot.
And that's why the drugs won't cook.
It's hot. Because of the humidity.
I just wanted to talk about cop movies just for a moment. Because this is one of many, many, many that it's for the boys. The target audience is men. The characters are mostly men. These movies can't envision a world where women would be participants in the story in the context of anything besides them being like the damsels who get dragged along.
Yeah.
In terms of cop movies that prominently feature a woman as an officer, I can think of Silence of the Lambs. I can think of Zootopia. I can think of The Heat.
Oh,
and it. The list kind of stops there for at least off the top of my head.
And if you're a listener that's like, I need to tweet another movie, that's not the point of
that's
what
not
she
the
was
point.
Saying.
Right.
There's not a lot. Don't add us.
And on the other hand, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of cop movies about boys.
Yes. So. But the fact that this is a big budget movie with two black leads is great.
Also, I don't think that people look at Bad Boys as a police movie. They don't really act like police. They don't ever drive a police car.
They are like, perhaps not very good at being police.
Yeah, no. This is like just your two homeboys who I guess work in the police department, you know, just kicking it, having a good time, maybe being sexy, maybe solving a crime. Like, I've never looked at Bad Boys movies and been like, oh, the cops look so cool. However, I know that's how they're looked at by people who are in law enforcement and by men sometimes because like there was recently, like maybe a month and a half ago, there was a shootout in Miami where they were trying to act like fake ass bad boys and everybody's about to go down for this shit. I'll pull up the specific incident, but it was with a UPS truck.
Oh.
They stole a UPS truck, these criminals, and they also kidnapped the guy who was driving the UPS truck. So then Miami PD thought this was their bad boys moment. So they out on the motherfucking highway shooting at the UPS truck. The UPS truck shooting back. They are shielding themselves. So I wish this was a lie. Yeah. Shielding themselves with real civilians who are in cars. They're like hiding behind the cars and shooting. I'm like, bitch, I'm not about to be your shield, the fuck? Yeah. Like they thought they were in Bad Boys. So, unfortunately, this does really influence a lot of dumbass police officers who want to get their kicks on Route 66. But I've never regarded Bad Boys movies as like, oh, cops. Like, I don't think of them like cop movies.
I honestly forgot that this was a cop movie before I started watch like it's,
they just have guns. They really could be rogue vigilantes.
And the movie also has the characters specifically remind you that they're cops several times. And I don't think that's a mistake because they don't dress like cops. They don't travel in. I mean,
there's this scene.
And
where
I think that the movie's more like fun that way. Like no one wants to watch a cop.
They also kill a lot of people.
So many
they
people.
Kill a lot of people.
And Martin Lawrence at one point is like to Julie. He's like, you know, the bad guy is probably already know where you live, so I'll just leave now and let them come find you and kill you, and good luck with that. And then she's like, no, wait, please protect me. And he's like, okay, fine. But like, yeah, it's like that stuff. They're like rifling through all the crime scenes, like messing up crime scenes, like they're not good
everywhere.
Cops.
It's wild.
I love the trope, and I love the trope of their boss just yelling at them like every day is their last day, you know. But it never is.
This is the last time. You're like, no, it is
not.
One thing I did like was, and it was it deeply couched in no homo rhetoric, particularly at the beginning.
You dug it out?
Yes. But when at the beginning, when Martin Lawrence tells Will Smith that he loves him, he's like, "You're my partner. I love you." Uh-huh. And Will Smith is like, "No homo, no homo, no homo." And we're like, "Ugh, I hate 1995 so much." And then... But then at the end, there's a little friendship arc where Will Smith, in the first and only time any sort of toxic masculinity is overcome in a Michael Bay movie, Will Smith tells Martin Lawrence, "You're my partner. I love you." Are they standing over a dead body? Of course they are.
That makes it no homo.
As long as there's a man that they've just killed, then we know that they're straight.
Could be true.
I mean, if there wasn't a dead body there, then how do you know they're not lovers? You know what I mean?
There's also, so between this, in the middle of this arc, there is another weird no homo scene where I think you wouldn't even necessarily catch it unless you had the subtitles on, which is why I watch all my movies with subtitles. Brag.
We get it. You can read.
I do have a master's degree in screenwriting from Boston University.
Which means you can read.
Which means I need to learn how to read. How
you're like, you want to see how I can read?
So good. I love watching Caitlin read, honestly. It's a pleasure.
You can watch it all day. Yes. You can watch it all day.
So they say you can make money out of anything. I watch Caitlin read. I pay her for it.
Thank you for that. No, but there's the scene where they go into like a bodega and notable actor Sean Taub, I'm not entirely sure how to say his name, but he plays like the bodega owner, and he sees that Martin Lawrence and Will Smith both have guns and he thinks he's about to get robbed. So he pulls out a gun on them, but because he... English isn't his first language. The actor is Iranian. I don't know what the character is supposed to be, but it feels like there's racist stereotypes happening there.
Oh, it's fully troped out. Right. Yeah. I was surprised there wasn't more of that in a Michael Bay movie. Because if, like, in a Transformers movie, there'll be 25 scenes like that in a row.
Right. Also, it's Miami, so they were ripe for making those scenes. Because it's such a cultural melting pot that you can, you know, insert whatever racial trope you want wherever you want.
Right.
So they really went limited. They really like pulled back.
Yeah.
And I think still to date, the Transformers franchise is the worst example of the highest concentration of Michael Bay racism. Mm-hmm. And like, not coincidentally, that's the franchise he has the most power over. Right.
But in any case, so in this scene where we've got this bodega owner who he's saying something like, he's holding a gun to them and he's like, "I will blow you," meaning like, "I will blow you away with my gun." Yeah. And then Martin Lawrence is like, "Blow me? No, you can hump me, but blow me." Like, it's really weird. And it's
really
like,
hard to arrive at the offensive joke they're trying to make, too.
It's called improv.
Yes.
Oh, wait. Martin Lawrence just had that at the top of his head. How incredible. At the end of that scene, I like how that scene ends when Will Smith has the gun and he's like, "Get me," was like,
bubblicious
and Skittles. And you're like, "Damn it, Michael Bay, you got me at the end." But it was racist and homophobic, and then they somehow stuck the landing. Horrible.
I think those lines were improvised, so it has nothing to do with Michael Bay. Okay. It was
the bad
Will and Martin
and Skittles. I laughed.
A similar racist joke is made in this movie that is made in Transformers, where a character speaks a few words of Spanish and then a character who does not speak Spanish is like, "What the hell did you say? Yeah. English, please."
Especially in Miami, this is especially ridiculous.
Especially working for the police.
Right.
Like, so y'all, you ain't never had to speak to nobody in Spanish.
You don't know what the word cojones means. You've never heard that word before. Okay.
Sure. One time for the xenophobes.
So
they need content too.
But it is Michael Bay's favorite joke because he keeps using it over and over again.
Oh, he thinks it's hilarious. He regales all the 19-year-olds he hangs out with. Hilarious joke he came up with 30 years ago.
Literally.
Oh my God.
My favorite part of the movie is, here we go. Ready
hit
for
it,
this?
Hit
okay.
It.
At the very beginning, when Martin Lawrence and Will Smith are being carjacked, they're like, "Hey, we're cops. You're messing with cops right now." And the carjacker's like, "Oh, yeah? Well, I'm a stand-up comedian, and I suck."
Oh, I liked that, too. I was just like, what?
representation of a man, of a stand-up comedian who's a man, admitting that he sucks at stand-up comedy.
Hasn't happened before or since.
I know. We need to see more of it.
Incredible. I forgot. So, I really did like that, too.
Excellent.
Did you guys know that Michael Bay's first job in film was working on Raiders of the Lost Ark?
No.
How weird is that? He was like an intern on Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Oh, my gosh. Do you think he met Alfred Molina?
He better not have. He better stay the fuck away from him. I would be so pissed if they've met.
just the meeting.
If they met in passing, I'm fucking done. But so I guess this is another, just like Michael Bay has always been the worst. So he's living his really difficult life in the valley, and he gets this internship, horrible for him, on one of the most famous movies of all time.
Oh, my God.
Oh, so difficult. He's struggling. Mm-hmm. He's an intern on Raiders of the Lost Ark, and I guess he spends his whole time on that movie being like, this movie's going to fucking suck. And then when it comes out, he said, oh, it was good. I want to be a film director now, too. And
fuck him.
And George Lucas actually contributed to the Michael Bay oral history. And he was shady in a way that I thought was funny. He said, Michael's films are identifiable. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I was like, good for you, George Lucas.
You know when you see trash? You know when you on the New York sidewalk and then you just get a whiff of something? That's like Michael Bay movies. So you know
they're identifiable.
I mean? You know when you pass in the shawarma and you know when you pass in the Michael Bay movie.
George Lucas out here being a bitchy obstacle to Michael Bay. Yes. Can't believe it. I love it.
You better be Teresa wife, George Lucas. Channel that energy.
Oh, I thought that was really funny. Well, I hate that this movie's fun to watch.
I know.
But cause... now I'm like, should I see the new one? It's not, Michael Bay doesn't appear to be involved at all. Is it still written by three white guys? As far as I can tell, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's a time-honored Bad Boys tradition.
Yes.
It has to be written by people who do not know what they're talking about.
If the formula works.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They have two new directors on. I mean, who knows? Uh-huh. Maybe it will be...
I'll use my AMC A-List Stubs membership to see it for free.
VIP. I tried to unsign up from that, and then they were like, you have to stay for 3 months. I'm like, well, now I have to see Bad Boys 3. So.
It makes it worthwhile.
I will see
also,
it.
Also, I do love just like the grotesque waste of money in these movies, because in Bad Boys 2, they have one of those carports that you like deliver cars in. So you'll have like 12 cars kind of stacked up on each other on a big rig.
Yeah.
They have one in Bad Boys 2 where they like unload it, and then all the cars just start shooting off of the truck, and then they're dodging the cars that are just flying in the road, and I was like, this is so much money. You know, and it's horrible to think about how much money it is.
The new Bad
Boys,
I
want to see how they top it.
Bad Boys has a $90 million budget.
Wow.
So
I thought it would have more than that.
I'm like, that's Cats level.
Can
budget.
They blow up a building with that much money? I don't know.
Probably with a computer.
Yeah.
Huh. But they used to blow a real building.
Michael Bay blew so much. That was one of the things that they like. He mentioned was he like put $25,000 of his own money to make a couple extra cars explode. Like, he worked outside the budget of the. He spent
See?
His meatloaf money.
Dork. He's a black man.
He spent his meatloaf money on Bad Boys explosions.
That's what black people have to do. They were like, we'll put you in the movie, but you got to bring some of your own money. So he gets it. Michael Bay gets it.
He's got that valley mentality. The fact, this man. Well,
are there any other final thoughts?
I hate that this movie's fun.
I know.
But it's fun. It's bad in so many ways.
So bad. And yet not Michael Bay's worst, as we've said before.
I would honestly say, of what I've seen, one of his best.
Yeah. I would say this is my favorite Michael Bay movie.
And that's saying nothing.
I never thought I would say that sentence, and I'm horrified. Please never, like, if anyone's out there trying to isolate that clip. Please
You're gonna
don't.
Get canceled. We hope that we've demonstrated that we understand why the shortcomings but it's fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
What can
so,
you do?
we alluded earlier that it, I guess, does pass the Bechdel test.
I think even without asterisks, it passes in that scene because I was. ready to be like, oh, like the scene prior where Max and Lois are talking, there's like two lines where they're not explicitly talking about a man, but the context of the conversation is still about a man. So I'm like, oh, maybe it doesn't pass. But then the next scene, I'm pretty sure they're talking about their relationship with each other.
Yeah,
about
being roommates.
I'm a photographer. I owe you one. What does she owe her for? We don't know. But it's referenced.
Yeah, true. But then they do start talking about Will Smith's character toward the end of that conversation. But there is, yeah, that two line exchange at least that technically passes. And then also Julie and Teresa talk to each other, but I think they're talking only about men because Teresa shows up at Mike Lowry's condo and she's like, is my husband here? And Julie's like, is he the short one or the tall one?
Objectifying men.
Love it. Love it. Michael Bay, a woke king. You heard it here first on Mental Guest.
And probably has good politics too. You can quote us on it.
All right. That brings us to our nipple scale. 0 to 5 nipples based on its representation of women. It still gets like a 0.25.
Yeah, like you can't give it really. I'll give it the. I'll give it. And keep in mind sliding scale for this one. Because Michael Bay. Give it 0.5.
Okay.
Because Taya Leone got to make a few decisions.
She drove a truck for 10 seconds.
She shot a gun once. Did it ruin Club Hell? Yes, we didn't talk about that. She shot a gun one time. She
in a club in Miami.
It's called Club Hell.
It's on brand.
But anyway, so 0.5 because Taylor Leone made decisions and they didn't make her kiss at the end. Everything else, bad, 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 bad.
Yes.
Boys, 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 boys.
Bad boys.
Bad boys, bad boys, bad boys.
Look, man, I gotta give it a one nipple.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, because it's got a special place in my heart. I'm going to even make the nipple maybe slightly darkened areola for black man Michael Bay. And stay strong, king. No, but like, I mean, I did enjoy that she didn't, Taya didn't have to kiss. She got to talk a good deal. I mean, there is one scene, unfortunately, it's very sad. It doesn't truly like surpass the Bechdel test, but it does pass the bare minimum and requirements. And then also, you know, I never saw Taya's titties. I mean, she did have to oil
them. We see her underwear. She falls down at one point and she's wearing a really short skirt and then like her skirt flies up and you see her underwear.
Okay, so well, I'm going to blame that on the wind.
Okay.
But again, she's still styled more respectfully than we see in later Michael Bay movies.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, I'm running from the, you know, cartel in my bra for some reason.
No, Will Smith is the objectified one in that one.
Yeah, his shirt is somehow always unbuttoned and the wind is billowing and he's oiled up.
He's single. He's got to always be oily. And aren't all single people just oily?
I am. And I'm trying to let the people know I'm out here. You know what I mean? You gotta be lubed up. You gotta be catching sunrise.
Lacey's lubing herself as we speak.
Yes.
Sam Ike, friend of the show Sam Ike, brought up in our Men in Black episode something that I think about often, because he said that the female lead in that movie does not kiss
Tessa.
Is that her name?
Tessa Thompson.
No, sorry, not the new Men in Black.
Oh, the old one. Okay.
The 98 or 97 first Men in Black movie.
97, and it's Linda Florentino.
Oh, right. Damn.
So we do not see her kiss anyone in that movie either, but Sam Ike speculated that it's because the male lead that would have been made the most sense to pair her with was black, and he speculated that audiences wouldn't have wanted to see an interracial kiss. So I wonder if that is why there's no kissing in this movie, because it's the same actor, Will Smith.
Damn.
God
damn it.
Yeah.
Am I going to have to take some of my nipple back? I'm taking back the hairs.
This is speculation, but it's not far-fetched.
I remember Sam saying that as well. Yeah.
I don't think it's far-fetched. I mean, also in the 90s, was it the 2000s or the 90s when Save the Last Dance came out?
I think it was maybe 2000.
Yeah, early 2000s.
Early 2000s.
Yeah, but that was still when the plot of a movie was we're in an interracial relationship. That was the whole plot of the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, 2001. Yeah. So, like, Thank you, Sophie. So, like, that's, you know, still, like, the 90s, 2001, that's super close in time period. So that makes sense that at the end of the movie, they were like, look, white people will watch two Negroes. It's just like how they let a black man be president. They're like, he's still a man, but we don't want to see him sucking on women, okay? We don't want to see his big old lips on our women. Uh-huh. So that makes sense to me. Yeah. Oh, that's shitty. I thought they were just respecting her. Nah. When in doubt, always go with racism.
That, yeah. All right. Well, shout out to Sam Mike for correctly calling that. We thought that maybe that Michael Bay had made a choice that was nice to women, but it turns out it was racist.
Yeah.
So fuck.
So yeah, my nipple, I'm gonna give 2.5. Or sorry, what? Oh my god.
What?
0.25. Oh my god. Cancel me.
You know what? I gotta go down to half.
Okay, half nipple.
I'll stick at half.
Yeah, I'm gonna go 0.25 because of like the two things that the Julie character gets to do, but everything, as we've discussed, is just like framing women as obstacles, framing women as damsels, framing women as frigid shrews. A lot of, you know, racist stereotypes are employed in this movie.
Yeah.
A lot of no homo moments. I mean, just it runs the whole gamut of problematic stuff. And it is a Michael Bay movie, so we are not surprised. But it is fun. So, and I hate that I think that.
And I think it's mostly fun because of Martin Lawrence and Will Smith. Like, it's fully the performances that make this movie fun. Let's not give...
Michael Bay deserves none of the credit.
You didn't like those camera angles?
You know what? I really think it was the extra car exploding that really took it over the top for me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't fare well. This movie, Lacey, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me back. It's always I love this show.
Such a treat.
Yes.
We love you.
I love
Come
you
back anytime.
Where can we find you online?
Guys, you can find me at DIVALACI Diva Lacey on all platforms. And guys, if you want to hear more of my voice, Scam Goddess Pod. Scams you want to email me, scamgoddesspod@gmail.com. It's Scam Goddess Pod on all platforms.
Yay.
Love it. Yes.
So good. You can follow us, Bad Boys.
Oh, God. Take so that sorry. Back right now.
Leave it.
At Bechdelcast on social media platforms.
Yes.
You can subscribe to our Patreon, a.k.a. Matreon. It's $5 a month. You get 2 bonus episodes plus our entire backlog of episodes.
Our Bad Boy backlog.
Our Bad Boy backlog. Say that 3 times fast. What else do we got? Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
And check our website for upcoming tour dates.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Merch as well.
But look out for that bitchy obstacle t-shirt. Someone remind me to make that. We love you so much.
Bad boys. What you gonna do when they come for you?
Bye.
Bye.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.